My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. And welcome into episode 4.1, or 4.5, or however you want to phrase it, of Best Dans in Baseball. Dan and I are recording this Friday night, after the Cardinals have lost again to the Padres. We recorded this Thursday night, after the Cardinals had lost to the Padres, so at least that didn't change. And then when we went to playback, we realized that Dan recorded and I had the mute button on. So while we got the better half of the deal and we thought about releasing it and letting you just kind of fill in your own questions and seeing what, you know, it's kind of like a Mad Libs type of thing. but instead we decided we'd try to do this again. We may kind of hit some points a little harder or faster, just because we did this yesterday and we don't necessarily want to rehash it too much, but it's still probably going to be an hour, folks. I hate to tell you. So, Dan, let's go like we did last night. We've just got another data point to go with. This offense is struggling. We saw them one run tonight, three runs the night before, one run against the, well, I mean, it's just nothing is going right. Even, you know, even if you go back to that Cubs series, except for that 8-run game, there's not a whole lot going right on this offense. And right now, that margin for error is so small, and the pitching staff can't overcome that.
Oh yeah, I mean tonight, I mean, you know, another great start from the pitcher. I mean, Michael Wacha goes 7 innings, you know, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. He deserved to win the game. I mean, every starter in this 4-game losing streak has deserved to win. It's just a shame that the offense is just. I mean, you know, I mentioned the Mets last night, how they can't score. Well, the Cardinals are doing their best impersonation of the New York Mets in this week. It's just they can't score. They had the bases loaded tonight. I thought they were going to break out. You have, you know, I think it was Scruggs at the plate. He grounds in a double play ball. And before you know it, I mean, Cashner's out of the inning and it's only 1-0. I mean, it's 3-1-0 leads this week. If the Cardinals have put together, the Cardinals usually when they score first, they're good. But this week they've gotten a 1-0 lead, but it just evaporates. And you know, and tonight you have Rosenthal gives up the you know, the triple in center field that eludes Tommy Pham and Jason Hayward, and then Jericho gets the hit. And it's just, you know, I think that was that Rosenthal's first earned run in I don't know how long. I mean, he had a streak going, didn't he?
I think so. I mean, he's only blown one save this year. And it seems like it's been a long while. Let me see if I can pull that up real quick and see how long. But it's probably been, let's see, he last gave up a run.
Pittsburgh on May 3rd.
Yeah. I mean, you're going back and that's.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, he's only given up 2 all year long.
That's just ridiculous.
So, maybe he was due, but
he was due.
I mean, but it, and again, that was not the only thing you could qualify on that was that he did throw a breaking pitch on 3-2 to Jericho. Was able to slap into the outfield. Maybe he should have gone with a fastball. He also had a couple of pitches that were a little close. I think maybe ball one. Could have been strike 3, maybe it was ball 2. There was a couple of them that were kind of close.
Yeah.
But still, and you know, honestly, it wouldn't have been a bad idea maybe to just not give him much of anything, pitch it on the outside, walk him and not worry about it.
Yeah.
But it's not the way it worked out. And Jericho, well, he kind of lived up his name tonight. Hitting the home run and then Drake, I mean, he drove in both runs tonight, but it really, again, we talked about it some in that mythical podcast that nobody's going to hear, but you know, this offense really needs something and we don't know what. Now, obviously, Matt Holliday, the report out today was that he's doing some running. He's not nearly at full speed. I think that maybe indicates that we're looking at maybe post All-Star break. If he's already not going full speed, I kind of hesitate to think that they'll bring him back before the All-Star game. He might, especially when you're playing the Cubs and the Pirates. But that, again, that's a lot of expectation to put on this team that, you know, to be fair, was struggling a little bit for runs even when he was in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where, you know, I mean, one player probably isn't going to do it. And I think Matheny, I credit Matheny for really juggling the lineup tonight. He had a really good, this is probably the best lineup I've seen all year. I mean, Tommy Pham comes up, he's in there, Scruggs is in there. You have, you know, you have your top four guys. I mean, the only thing that I can suggest now is what we mentioned last night, and we'll keep referencing that Mythical podcast. Because, hey, you know, everybody, let me just tell you, it was a good podcast. We're going to have to dimension, we'll have to mention and discuss a certain Colorado Rockies player, because that was actually some good stuff last night, and it still holds water after this game. And we'll get to that later. But, yeah, I mean, only thing I could suggest, and we mentioned it last night, is moving Carpenter down. Maybe you move him down and you put Grichuk up top. You mix it up even more. But how many times can Mike Matheny really mix these guys together? And now there's really nobody in Memphis. You brought up Scruggs, Garcia, Tommy Pham. Biscotti has to play every day, so he isn't going to be up here until September at the very earliest, unless there's a big injury or a malfunction, which, man, this team just can't handle. I mean, you pretty much have what your minor league system and your major league team can produce. And now it's up to this team just to hit. As Bernie Miklas wrote a couple of years ago when the Cardinals were going through a big struggle, you know, you could try to call on outside guys, but you can also just call on your guys that are on your 25-man roster right now who are just not hitting. Guys like Yadier Molina, who once again swings at the first pitch and grounds into a very rough double play ball. The guy is hitting .287, and you can't talk too bad about Yadi without being stoned if you're anywhere near St. Louis, because he's just a great all-around player. But he'll swing at that first pitch, and you know he's not really swinging a great bat. He doesn't really need to be batting fifth. But then when you ask yourself, if he doesn't bat fifth, then who does bat fifth? I mean, do you move Matt Carpenter down to fifth and put Grichuk up in a two-hole? Do you, you know, when Holiday gets back, Peralta moves back to the four spot. But do you think any more juggling with this lineup can possibly help them score runs? And I can't sit here and really tell our listeners that, hey, you know, as long as he just keeps juggling the guys up and down, move them around, sooner or later they're going to hit. I don't know. I think we're just moving towards a point where he's going to have to make a trade. And I don't know who he's going to have to give. It's going to be somebody that the fans probably don't want to give up, but it's going to have to happen.
It does seem like that way. It does seem that we're pushing toward John Mozeliak making some sort of move, because, like you said, there's not a lot of other options. Now, we'll see how Tommy Pham does. We'll see how long that lasts. It was interesting. I actually predicted that to our friend Bob Netherton. I had a feeling that that's what would happen. Cooney would go back down. I am a little surprised they sent Cooney down so quickly, though, not necessarily knowing what Garcia is going to be. They must have a fairly solid report on that, or they were just wanting enough to get Pham up here, and they'll make the move for Lyons or whoever after, if they need to, when Garcia comes back up. But, you know, it is what it is, unfortunately, now. And that is an offense that's a struggle. Now, again, this has not been an offense that has clicked on a significant level all year long. It's just, you know, getting enough. And right now, they're just not getting enough. Now, how much of that gets put on the hitting coach? You know, again, he's not the guy out there hitting. He's not the guy swinging the bat. But, you know, you start wondering, this is the second year in a row that has been iffy. And really, if you look at 13, I mean, that was propped up by that ridiculous runners in scoring position average. I mean, of, you know, what, 330 or whatever, that just isn't sustainable. I mean, is there a coaching philosophy that needs to be tweaked as well?
Yeah, I mean, if the roster can't really help out, you're going to have to start searching really deep. I mean, is there something that John Mabry is just, I mean, you know, I don't put a ton of stock in the hitting coaches, but is there something that he's just not reaching the players, or are they not working on what they should? I mean, can they not adjust, or is this lineup just kind of, like you said, becoming a more of a light hitting offense? Like you said, we had that great year in 2013. Last year, you know, we hit here, we hit there, very streaky, not a lot of power. And even with Matt Holliday, you know, even as much as I want him to help the offense when he comes back, I think they're still going to be scratching for runs. The only thing that I think that Matt Holliday does is that he kind of helps come. I mean, when people say he's the heart of the offense, I really buy that. Because he's a guy that has pop. He can get on base. He kind of helps, you know, he puts in there a lethal bat in there. And I think when he left the lineup, and, you know, Matt Adams had been struggling, but when he left the lineup, both, I mean, you know, you lose two Matts that are supposed to be big, heavy hitters in your lineup. And I think this group just got even weaker. I mean, they get on base a lot. They hit a lot of doubles. But, you know, this week, it's just really revealing a lot of troubling traits that have been known for a while about how they swing at the first pitch. They waste a lot of opportunities, and they don't have, you know, that big hit capability. I mean, they have warning track power right now. It just seems like nothing's going right, and you just hope that they're going to snap out of it. You hope it's just a cold streak. You hope that you would hope that against the Padres that, you know, we'd get a little batting practice in before we went out and faced, you know, the Cubs and the Pirates, but it's backfiring. We scored two runs and back to back nights, and it's just, I mean, nothing's real. I mean, we scored the one run, and is it just me, or yeah, both runs the last two nights have scored on ground outs. I mean, Yadi had the RBI, or no, wait, was it last night we scored three runs?
We scored three runs last night. It was one run against the White Sox.
Oh, man. Yeah. See, I just busted up my whole narrative. But, you know, let's just put it this way. I mean, you know, the three runs really. When they were down 3-1 last night, I thought, okay, they're done. Mm-hmm. And when you get shocked that your team scores three runs to tie the game, it's just not a good thing. And I mean, even last night, I mean, even the night before when we're not facing Chris Sale and we score one run, it really makes you think what is going to snap this offense out of it. I mean, I can say all day about Matt Holliday coming back and hopefully he'll help. And you call up every possible guy in Memphis, and they have gotten some big hits. I mean, we'd love to have Garcia play more, but, I mean, where are you going to do it? You're going to have to either, you know, sit down Colton Wong, or you move Peralta to the third and Carpenter to first, and that's not going to happen. So we all love the bat of Greg Garcia, but none of these guys are going to be able to just cure all the problems. As Crash Davis just told me on Twitter, as much as I want to think Matt Holliday is going to help, you know, he isn't going to cure everything, and that's just the hard part. Is that there isn't a solution in sight except for a certain guy that we talked about last night, and his name is?
Well, we did talk about Tulowitzki, and then we did that later on in the show. Again, it's an interesting idea. It's not an idea that I can expect would happen, but given the Rockies are in last, given the fact that, you know, Tulowitzki seems to be more open to a deal than he has been in the past, given the fact that, you know, I don't know what Mo could get for him. I mean, I don't know that Mo could trade enough for him, given the status of the minors. Although that may be another reason why we're seeing Scruggs and Garcia and Pham, is to let people see them on the major leagues, you know, stage for a trade possibility. But, you know, I mean, you get Tulowitzki, you shift Peralta over to third, you move Carpenter over to first, you solve a lot of some of the issues that we seem to be having. Now, again, very expensive. You'd have to see what the Rockies eat some of that salary, or the Cardinals do have the financial resources. You let them, you know, say, we'll take on the salary and we will give you a lot lesser quality prospects. Maybe you give them a Scruggs and a, Pitrick or a Lions or something, even though I'd hate to see that, of course. Yeah. You know, something like that, and we're taking on that whole $20 million for the next 3 years or whatever the contract is, which is, and, you know, you just hope that he stays healthy, because that's a huge chunk of money, especially when you're trying to sign Jason Hayward to a similar type of deal.
Sure, yeah, so. And it's just, you know, I mean, you look at his season, you know, he's played, he's healthy through 72 games, he's got, you know, a great, you know, .357 on base. He's got a .479 slug. He's hitting, as we all know, you know, when Troy Tulowitzki is healthy, he's a great hitter. I mean, he's got 18 doubles. He's got, you know, only 8 home runs, but he's got 41 RBIs. I mean, the guy can hit, and you could put him right. You could probably slide him right into that third or fourth spot, and he'd be lethal. I mean, and you don't want to think about this. I'm sure Mozeliak doesn't want to think about giving up a ton of players or paying a guy $20 million for the next few years when you thought you had Johnny Peralta and he was doing it. And Johnny Peralta's really offensively, outside of Matt Holliday, he's probably your best player, and he, even probably more so than Holliday, because he's hitting right around 300. You know, he's 11 home runs. He's having a great year. So you thought that the last thing you'd be thinking if you're John Mozeliak is, okay, I have to go out and get Troy Tulowitzki. But just because of the way that this team is hitting and how much good pitching they're wasting. I mean, as we get into this schedule, folks, as July starts to pass and August comes on, these teams are going to start getting hungry and teams are going to start playing well. You know, if the Cardinals have been coasting along, I mean, you know, their lead is already starting to shrunk. And based on if the Pirates and their game ever gets going with Cleveland here tonight, where they're trailing 3-2 in the seventh, I mean, if they win tonight, I mean, they're 5 out. And we're going to be facing them 4 times this next week. And, you know, when you get past the All-Star break and into late July, this is where things start to get tense. I mean, the Cardinals' superiority and their dominance through 3 months is great, but it doesn't mean anything if we give all that up in July and August and September. And, you know, if you're John Mozeliak with this offense, the way they've kind of struggled most of the year to be consistent, to put, you know, to put runs across the board. I mean, we can get on base. As you can see, I mean, even when we only get 7 or 8 hits, we draw walks, we get on base, and you know, we can have those games where we string doubles together, but there's too many games where we get on base and nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And there's RBI groundouts, there's double play balls like tonight. I mean, nothing happens. I mean, well, when you and I were sitting at Dickie Stephens Park, I mean, we even were like, oh my gosh, we took the lead back. Oh my gosh, it's 6-1, it's 8-1. I mean, it's just when you're not believing when your team's scoring 6 or 8 runs, it's that means your offense for your team is pretty weak. And it's just one of those things where it might have to be a radical change. Maybe Mo doesn't see a small fix. Maybe he can't get Adam Lind from the Brewers. And maybe Lind isn't a big enough deal. Maybe if Lind comes here, the impact isn't that great. But there's going to have to be a move made. I mean, 2-3 weeks ago, we talked about what was a bigger need. And as we see now, the pitching has held up. I mean, it's July 3rd, and the pitching is as good as it's been. Even with Rosenthal, you know, giving up the run in the ninth tonight, I mean, just great start after great start. And it is tomorrow night is Carlos Martinez. I mean, he's going to go out and be as good. I mean, what if he goes out tomorrow and the Cardinals waste another great performance? Mozeliak he's seeing this. He has to understand that this team's going to need something, and it's probably going to be more than likely outside the organization.
It would seem to be. Now, the downside to Tulowitzki, besides the cost and what it would take to get him and all the various other things, is the fact that he is better at Coors Field than he is away from home. I mean, he's got a 922 OPS in Coors. He's got a 748 in outside of the Mile High City. So, I mean, he's still hitting 294, 748 OPS. I think we take that. But, and sometimes it seems like this team just needs that person that can get that hit. And,
yeah, you know, the big bat.
You get
bad.
One hit in a game, and sometimes the floodgates open. If you don't get that hit, nothing happens. And that may have been the case tonight. We saw bases loaded, nobody out, Xavier Scruggs up. You know, if he gets a hit, you know, probably at least 2 runs score there, and the inning keeps going. Instead, he runs it to the double play. You get the 1 run, but then that's 2 outs and Tommy Pham up, and, you know, it's difficult to get a 2 out hit. He didn't, and we saw what happened from there. So, you know, again, I don't know. I think, like you say, Mo's going to do something. He's not going to do something for the All-Star break. I mean, that's just not Mo's style to do that. But I think that's okay. I think you go through the Cubs and the Pirates series, and that really tells you, hey, this is what we've got. You know, if you can play up to the level of competition, which we've seen the Cardinals do at times, you know, and if you go, you know, what, 6-2 through that stretch or better, I mean, you start putting that gap again behind, you know, between you and Pittsburgh and the Cubs, then, you know, maybe that makes a different deal. If you split it, if you lose those series, if Pittsburgh gets within a couple of games, you know, maybe you do pull the trigger, you know, right after the All-Star break or right earlier. And try to make a different type of move. So, you know, Mo's definitely going to be working this time. And the problem is, as we segue, Mo can't give his full attention to all this because we're in the middle of the sacking scandal again. Yesterday, the Cardinals announced that they had fired Chris Correa, who is the scouting director, in relation to this. Well, I don't know if they announced it was in relation to this, but everybody knows it was in relation to this.
Yes.
You know, Correa does not admit anything in public. It sounds like he hacked into their into Houston's database once to see if they had taken any proprietary information. He seems to be very adamant that Houston and more specifically Jeff Luhnow did take some stuff from the Cardinals. But it seems like there's at least a couple of hacks that are still not accounted for, that they may not have been Korea. And the publishing of the data on the websites does not seem to be tied to him as well. So there's still more to come. It seems unlikely that there's anybody higher than Korea that's going to get this. And obviously Korea wasn't the scouting director when he did it, but he was a man on the rise and he's been promoted since then. It's a black eye for the organization. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, we didn't want it to reach this high. I mean, any Cardinal fan didn't want to hear that a guy who just handled the draft last month, a guy that was really looked at as a great shining beacon in this organization, is now gone, and possibly as we found today, he could be facing criminal charges. I mean, they want to charge the one responsible, and they want put the name out there. I think we all know it's Chris Curry at this point. I mean, we pretty much know that it coincides with this investigation that he was the one who's responsible, and you hope it's the highest it goes, because this really has to end. I mean, and I think, you know, being human, you know it's affecting Mozeliak. I mean, you know he's trying to give all of his attention to his baseball team. But in the back of your mind, even though you yourself and Bilda would have been cleared, it still affects your team, and it affects your team's reputation. It may affect, you know, the way other teams want to do business with you. And, you know, it affects you because of, you know, your connection to Jeff Luhnow, the GM of the Astros, and how, you know, you mean Mozeliak and Jeff Luhnow created this Red Dog player evaluating system. I mean, I think it was Redbird Dog, I think was the name of their system they created. Yeah. You know, so it's always going to be connected, and Jeff Luhnow can say, oh, no, we started our own thing out in Houston, and nobody's going to believe him. Because it just, I mean, there's a connection between these two guys. And when it went this high, I mean, talk about this having your life get turned around in a year. I mean, if you're Chris Curry and you get, you know, promoted to this great thing, I mean, to being a scouting director, and now you could be facing criminal charges in July here. That's just a big deal. And it affects the Cardinals. It affects the way that people look at the Cardinals. Because, you know, we already have a bullseye on our back to begin with. And this just kind of makes it bigger. And you hope it just doesn't get dragged out any longer. You hope that it just comes to an end. And this is it. Okay. We found they've taken care of the problem. Maybe there's a couple more underlings or guys that worked under him. You just don't want this to go on, because as we are, we're getting into July. We're getting into the meat of the schedule. And, you know, all the attention of our general manager needs to be on baseball.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation. Now, like I said last night, I do believe Jeff Luhnow took some stuff from the organization, and maybe more than they wanted him to take. I know he took more minds from the front office than they really were looking for. In fact, Mozeliak finally came out and said, you can't take anybody else, at the time of his movement to Houston. So I'm not surprised. Now, whether he took it, you know, if it's one of those things that was just stored in his head and he jotted it down, or if he took some actual files, that's a different story. And it's difficult to say, you know, if he created something very similar to Redbird Dog, if he had a hand in it, maybe he should have been able to create a system similar. I don't know. You can debate that. But whatever the case, you know, Korea had no business going into another team's database and trying to find out. My feeling is he probably talked to Mo and Bill DeWitt, and they said, hey, look, it may be true, but we're not going to mess with it. We're just going to let it go. And he decided he would try to find something maybe fairly incriminating to force them into the legal channels of, you know, going through the commissioner's office, going through whatever channels that need to be done.
He thought he was in a movie, like we said last night. This is one of the guys in the movies. They go, no, I'm going to rebel against my bosses. I'm going to find the leak, and I'm going to, you know, be the guy in the end who raises his hand in the air, and now you're probably going to jail.
Yeah. I mean, that's the key. You know, in the movies, they tend to, you know, not pay too much attention to the little small breaking and entering when you uncover corruption at the highest levels. But when it comes to real life, and especially when there doesn't seem to be any smoking gun evidence either, you know, real life means you get jail time, and your career in baseball is over. And that's tough. I mean, I don't know what this guy, you know, the guy's got degrees. He can do something else out of baseball, but that has to be a difficult thing for him. And granted, he brought it on himself. Don't get me wrong, but to know that you can't work in this industry anymore. And this is a guy, what, he's 34, something like that. I mean, he had a long career. He could have worked in baseball another 30 years. Now he's got to go, you know, completely reevaluate what he's going to do. And that's assuming he doesn't have a felony on his record and he doesn't have jail time and things of that nature, because that makes it even more difficult. So, it is a situation that I think we have probably seen the bulk of the iceberg. There's probably still a little bit left underwater, but I don't think we're going to have anything worse, but it is going to be something that drags on a little bit. And it may be, you know, the Cardinals found out about Correa seemingly before the FBI did. So it may be that they know enough that Mo can be a little bit more relaxed, can be a little more focused. At least with that out of the way, with the worst of it out of the way, he can really look at the trade deadline and get what this team needs.
Yeah, I mean, I really want this just to be done. Yeah, like you said, so he can focus on the Cardinals and not have to worry about any more storm clouds coming over Busch Stadium. I mean, I'll feel bad for Mo, because he has been cleared, and I know I can sit from my house in Arkansas and tell you that there's no way Mo knew anything about this. This is not the way that Mo acts. Even from the beginning, when I heard about this, when I came out of a showing of Jurassic World, and my phone was like lit up, and I was like, oh no, FBI, Cardinals investigation, what is going on? And I don't need this. I mean, being a guy who writes about the team, this is the kind of things you don't like writing about. Because, you know, I'm not a CNN guy. I usually like to keep my FBI stories inside movies, not really in real life. And so the minute I heard about this, I thought, okay, so who could be guilty? It cannot be Mo. And if I'm Mo, in the way he's dealt with the press and what I've seen of his interviews, he just really wants this to go away. And I'm right there with him. I mean, I want this to go away so we can get back to baseball, we can get back to improving this team. Because I'm sure, in the front of his mind, he has, you know, how am I going to fix this offense? The pitching's great. I have a World Series team. I mean, you have a pitching right now that, you know, people can say maybe not, but you have, I mean, you've lost Wainwright. You haven't had Jaime Garcia at times, and you still have the best, I mean, pitching staff in baseball. And it's remarkable. And the most bittersweet thing about that is right now is that the Cardinals cannot score for that offense. That, you know, Carlos Martinez could maybe have as many wins as Michael Wacha right now. Michael Wacha, you know, deserved a win tonight. John Lackey deserved a win. And just a lot of these things where you're facing, and it doesn't help that we're facing weak teams. That's the hardest part. I mean, you go in and you sweep the Cubs. I mean, that was a big series this last weekend against the Cubs. I mean, they come into Busch Stadium, they kind of, you know, chewed up some space, and we demoralize the Cubs. I mean, we as I said last night on the Mythical podcast, that, you know, I mean, Joe Maddon told the press afterwards that the Cardinals schooled the Cubs. And then the Cubs went out and beat up on the Mets. I mean, they lost to Miami today, but come Monday, and I said this right after the game, and I said, you know, the Cardinals are going to make this a really easy series for the Cubs, because, you know, in Wrigley Field, bad stuff's going to happen. A lot of offense is going to have to come out, or if not, you're just going to be shut out. And we've seen the Cardinals get swept at Wrigley, and it's not pretty at all. And it's not what the team needs right now, and that's why we stressed last night that the Cardinals really need to, now they need to take the last two. You need to leave Busch Stadium, leave this San Diego Padres series with a resemblance of hope. Because if not, you're just going to have Ron Burgundy making fun of you on Sunday, like, oh, we swept you, and drinking his scotch. And it's going to be very sad if you're a Cardinal fan. Because if they happen to take this series, I mean, if they win tomorrow and we maybe escape with the game on Sunday, it's still a demoralizing week. And it's just, I mean, after what we did last week in winning six straight, to lose four straight now, and really tomorrow, I mean, as we talked about earlier, I mean, can we really hope this offense is going to score tomorrow? I can't tell you. I really can't. I have no answer. I think I've written as many words as I can about remedies, and I'm almost out of bullets.
If you want to look for the silver lining, and I guess somebody should, you look at the starting pitching that they have faced over the last four games. You know, Chris Sale, we all know about Chris Sale.
Yeah.
Jose Quintana has been pitching very well over the last, you know, his last six, seven starts, and a left-hander. That's always been a situation that's a problem. Yeah. Tyson Ross is not a bad pitcher. They probably, and they, you know, they did score three runs off him. Tyson Ross is not too bad. And then you run into Cashner tonight, who's another guy that's very, that's top of the line type of pitcher. So it's not that they have been shut out by a bunch of no names. Now, tomorrow night, you get, Orlando Disponi or whatever his name is for the Padres. He's, got an ERA around 5. That's a situation where, if he doesn't, if they don't hit him, then maybe it is a little bit more concerning. I mean, this guy that has struggled. If he's pitched better lately, he's got about a 4 ERA over his last 7 games, but still, that's a situation where you should probably beat him. And then you've got, I think, Ian Kennedy on Sunday, who I think is a guy that may have hit before. Again, they probably should have done more than they did against some of these pitchers. They definitely should have done some more than they did against some of these bullpens, although the starters have gone pretty deep in these games because the Cardinals aren't hitting them. But you'd like to think that if they start running into second and third string type pitching, that some of these hits are going to start falling, some of these things are going to work out. Again, until they do, and again, starting tomorrow night, and then, you go in and you play the Cubs and Pirates, and their pitching staffs are not significantly bad. The Cubs is kind of weak unless you run into Arrieta. Pittsburgh's got a quality staff all the way through, so that makes it difficult, but it's, you got to hope that you can take some advantage on some weaker pitchers and maybe get a little confidence back going into this big series next week with the two closest competitors.
Yeah, I mean all the Cardinals have to do, if you just split the rest of these series, if you can take the last two against the Padres, find a way to get 4 wins next week, you just got to hold these teams off, because then the All-Star break happens and you get a little bit of rest, and then you can come back in, and Holiday's going to be back. And, really, if he does come back for the Pirates series and he's a little rusty, hopefully he comes back and he's just 110% for post-All-Star break games. And then, as we said, and you're cruising into July 20th, and you're getting into those last 10 days before the trading deadline. And then Mozeliak's going to have to know what he needs. And all the Cardinals really have to do, they just have to score enough. I mean, I'm not asking this team to go out and score 8-9 runs a game. I'm asking for 5. Mm-hmm. I mean, just go out there and score. Like tomorrow, the guy's got a 5 ERA, go out there and put 4 or 5 up on him. Because the pitching staff, more than likely, the way they're pitching against any team right now, the Marlins, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Padres, up, down, and all around, no lineup can really touch these guys right now. I mean, when you're getting chipped for like 2 runs, and that's a loser right there, then, your pitching staff deserves better. And I think that, they can hold the fort, but they need some help from this offense. And they need to have a couple games where the Cardinals do score 4, 5, or 6 runs and just kind of take the burden off. And I think that can send a team on a great streak. It can send the Cardinals on another great streak. And, I remember when we walked into Colorado in early June, we kind of got beat up by the Rockies, and then I think we took that last game, and then we started playing better in June. Mm-hmm. And we had a great month, and then right at the end, and then the start of July, now we're kind of dipping back into rough waters again. And all I've known the past 4 years of this Cardinal team is it's a lot of extremes. There's a lot of winning streaks, and then there's losing streaks. But this year seemed to be a really steady pace, a very good play. And I think for the first time, the Cardinals are genuinely struggling. Is this their only 4-game losing streak of the season? I think mm-hmm. it has to be.
Yeah, it was perfect.
So you have, the first time they've lost now 3 and now 4 at home in a row. Their forced 4-game losing streak. So now we're kind of experiencing the worst. And it's up to the Cardinals to tell themselves, hey, we got maybe some weaker pitching to face. We have a great pitching on our side. All we have to do is do our jobs. And you hope that Scruggs starts tomorrow. You hope that, he puts together another lineup. I mean, I would seriously consider it's not going to happen. I must say that whenever – I almost want to put a disclaimer in all my articles of going, look, whatever I say isn't exactly going to happen. If I was the manager, I'm not Mike Matheny. The guy is going to do what he wants to do. He's got the record and the support. But, I would seriously consider, moving Carpenter down, put him into more of an RBI position. Are just, mixing up as much as you can, but with credit to Matheny, I'm not sure how much more he can mix it up.
Yeah, he's shuffled some, and there's no doubt. We look at this, and I think in St. Louis, we tend to think about 6 being a serious number. And the Cardinals have only put up six since the beginning of June, have only put up six times. And two of those, you know, two of those are those two double digit games against the Phillies. They haven't done it. They did it last Saturday against the Cubs while, like I said, you and I were sitting at Dickie Stevens. Maybe we're the problem. We need to go back to the ball game.
Yes, we do.
And see, even if they're not there, hang out at the park. Somebody pointed out that we've lost all our mats except for Carpenter, and Carpenter's not doing anything. Maybe we need to, you know, go find some more mats somewhere and build that reservoir back up, because that's been the problem. One guy that's not a mat but close, it's Mark Reynolds, and we've seen him struggle, and thankfully it's interesting to see that Mike Matheny has finally seen him struggle as well. We've seen Xavier Scruggs significantly play more over the last week. Scruggs leaves tonight with being hit on the wrist. Hopefully he's fine. Hopefully it's not a big deal. But Reynolds is just, you know, we talked about last night, he is just fallen off the end of the earth over the last month, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, with Reynolds, I mean, he, ever since the end of May where he started, you know, really getting the bulk of the playing time at first base, I mean, he just hasn't shown the power that was promised. I mean, he's come as advertised, everything except for the power. He struck out over 70 times. He's, you know, he's got a very low average, and he's had both those things for a while. But the third thing he always promises you is 20 home runs. And as Al Boski will remind us every broadcast that, hey, this guy's hit 20 home runs in seven straight years. Well, it's not going to happen this year. And I mean, you would expect Reynolds to, you know, strike out a bunch, have a low average, but at least by now give us like 9 or 10 home runs. Some kind of, I mean, not a cleanup kind of boomstick. I mean, Mike Matheny, I mean, every time he had him in the cleanup spot, it was just making the poor guy a liability. But he's got, I mean, if Randall Grichuk's got holes in his swings, then I think Reynolds is batting, is like torn in half. But it just comes down, with Reynolds, it's all or nothing. And when it comes to what all is right now, is probably a base hit or a magical triple, which he got the other night. He just, his bat has gone completely cold. And this is just, you know, I mean, this is ever since he started. I mean, if you look at the bulk, he's hitting around 230. I mean, once he had hit a respectable on base percentage, but now that's went down. There's been talk about the Cardinals having him change his approach, and that was a bad idea, because if a guy comes, if a gunman comes into town on his horse with the biggest rifle in town, and he may miss his bullseye target a couple of times, but he's going to hit it because he's a great shot. You don't hand the guy a different rifle. You know, you don't tell the guy, okay, we want you to change your approach. I mean, you got Merrick Reynolds for one reason, that he can hit home runs. He can give a power hungry team a little bit of a jolt, and he hasn't done that. And that's why we're looking to Xavier Scruggs in early July. And you're thinking about putting Dan Johnson on the 40-man roster, and you're talking about dealing for Adam Lind and Justin Morneau, and possibly, I mean, your first base was always kind of an interesting thing with Matt Adams and Mark Reynolds, but now that Adams went down and Reynolds is not hitting, and we don't know what Scruggs is going to do with extended playing time, it'd be great to find out. I mean, first base is a big problem, and when I think about getting a bat, that's the first place I think about. I think about going out and finding a first baseman. I just don't know what the Cardinals can trade or how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, and it's a difficult thing, and you're right. You know, Mark Reynolds is bringing you everything he expected, but unfortunately, when he's not bringing the power, that's really the only reason you signed him. You didn't sign him for the low average, and you didn't sign him for the strikeouts.
And
to be fair, Mark Reynolds was not supposed to be a starting option, and when he wasn't a starting option, things seemed to work a lot better. Like you said, it does seem a little silly to try to tinker with his stroke and have him hit ground balls like everybody else, because that's what you need. You need that pop. Now, he's going to strike out a ton. And again, you don't necessarily want that as you're starting. And maybe that's what the case was when he started to start. They said, hey, we can't have all these strikeouts. But, you know, we've got to, you know, maybe if they do trade for somebody, they can, if they're going to keep Reynolds, that he can modify a swing back to what it was. And, because like I say, we'll handle a 230. We'll handle the strikeouts if he can bomb it a few times. But like you said, he's not going to hit 15 home runs the rest of the season unless he gets on some sort of massive run, which we'd love to see, but seems pretty unlikely, that's going to happen. So, it's sad to see that the Cardinals can take a guy that's hit 20 home runs for a number of years, and as soon as they put him in a Cardinal uniform, he starts hitting, you know, five. But
he's been Mabry'd.
Yeah, it is, you know, I think there comes a time when you have to start looking at that. And again, unlike you, I don't know how much batting coaches really make that much impact.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there. I'm not sure what they can do. On a good note, people, the Cleveland Indians lead the Pirates 5-2 now on top of the eighth with bases loaded. So that's good. Good news.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully the Cardinals will be able to keep that lead at 6 over them.
Sorry to interrupt. I had on game day. I'm like, ooh, okay, good. They're playing again, and they've increased their lead.
Yes.
Because we really need to keep that 6-game lead.
Yeah, it's big, because I think there's a psychological impact of getting that within 5. If they get to 5 and then have a chance next week to get to 4. I mean, if they could get it to 4 before the Cardinals and them play, that's huge. I mean, because you could sweep the series and be tied for first. I mean, that's a big thing. But even going from 9 to 5, it's like, hey, we're on a roll, we're tearing it up, here we go. You know, going from, you know, getting a chance to keeping them at 6, that's something. It's not much. I think that this team, Pittsburgh, is a team that has worried me the whole time. I have
they
said
do.
That before.
Me too.
Talking with a Pirates blogger not too long ago, and he's like, oh, what are you talking about? And I'm like, dude, with the Cardinals dropping like flies and your team not losing, it's scary, and we're seeing that again now. This race, I think a lot of us kind of, you know, beginning of this week, we kind of thought, hey, we're going to walk right into the postseason. They still may walk into the postseason, but they're not guaranteed to walk in as a divisional title, even with this ridiculous record that they have.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to be really, I mean, just dicey and tense. I mean, and you keep thinking, okay, so is this offense just all of a sudden going to blast out? I mean, they haven't had an extended run. I mean, ever since they changed and moved Carpenter to the two-hole, maybe they had a little bit of an offensive breakout against the Phillies that week. And I think that was the same week that we swept the Pirates at home on walk-offs? I think that came right after the Phillies series, I think.
Let's see. Let me pull it up here. Let's see.
Yeah.
Was that back in? That wasn't back in April, was it?
That was back in May.
Yeah, April. They won 3 out of 4 against the Phillies, and then they swept the Pirates.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, I mean, we had a little bit of offensive breakout, but that was back in like April. I mean, ever since then, it's been up and down, and I mean, I think that, I mean, it's not going to be like a ship rocking trade like he did last year when he sent out Kelly and Alan Craig, but it's going to have to be something. And I think, you know, as I've said all along on last night tonight, I mean, it may be a trade that sends guys out that we don't want to send out. I mean, people got mad, I think, last year when the Cardinals shipped out a mid-level prospect for who was the guy that we got from the Indians?
Justin Masterson.
Justin Masterson, yeah. And we sent them Ramsey? James Ramsey,
yeah.
Yeah, so people got, I mean, if you got mad about Ramsey going, I mean, if he has to make a trade this year, I mean, it could be more than that. It's going to be a Memphis guy. It's going to be a Cardinal player. But, I mean, and then when you say that, though, you think, okay, it was all leading to this. It was all going to come down to Mo having to part with some of this young player, some of his prized possessions, and you know, but the way the Cardinals are hitting, I mean, even with Matt Holliday comes back, even if Scruggs hits a little bit better than Reynolds, I mean, it's not going to be catastrophic. I mean, I think the offense is going to need some help, and now, as we both know, it's just a matter of treading water until we can get to that point, and then how long, I mean, a matter of time before he has to make that trade.
Yeah, and that time may be coming. Again, it seems like we're beating the dead horse there, because we keep talking about it, but that is the key right now. I mean, if the Cardinals could get, and obviously Cardinals are not going to score 7-8 runs a game. It just, nobody scores 7-8 runs a game, but if they can just score, when they score 7 or 8 runs, it's not breaking news that breaks into, you know, whatever programming you're watching, and say, hey, the Cardinals actually scored over 4 runs. I mean, you know, it shouldn't be like you're talking about. It shouldn't be a huge surprise when they do that. And right now, you know, Twitter is a tough place to be during a game.
It is a tough place.
You know, and I don't argue with the fans that are taking this very hard, because it is. I mean, it is one of those things as a fan base, especially in the modern world, you're up, so up with the wins, and then you're way down with the losses. And when they put the four of them together in a row like this, you know, it's tough to imagine they'll ever win a game again. you know, so I get that. And really,
it's one of those things where, you know, we have to sit back and we have to go, okay, look, we're still 23 games over 500. I mean, we're still hopefully up by, you know, six games, and, you know, and the Cubs are still far back. And the Cardinals, I mean, we talk about them going in there and losing. Well, the Cardinals have a chance to push those teams back. I mean, as long as they can right the ship, I mean, there's still time, and people have to understand there's teams out there. Like, look at the Oakland Athletics, who were great last year, and they're having a bad season. You have a lot of teams that are just scratching around and having a horrible season. And Miami Marlins were supposed to be maybe a little bit better this year, and now they're bad again. And it's one of those teams where I try to make myself sit back and go before I really start talking about, I mean, how bad we're playing, and even look at the ledge that everybody else is standing on right now. I mean, you have to understand the Cardinals are still a great team. I mean, we have a great record. I mean, maybe they're not playing like a great team, but we have a great record, and a great record puts you in a position of being able to shake off a losing streak. And as much as we enjoyed that six game winning streak, maybe now we have to be strong. We have to understand that maybe this four game streak will pass. And as long as we do, I mean, maybe it's good that we have great pitching. Maybe it'd be a little bit crazier if we were just scoring runs and winning a bunch of 9-7 games, but we have great pitching, and we have great pitching that's been knocked around horribly by injury. And, you know, all the Cardinals, I've said it for weeks, we just have to, you know, I mean, as long as they just keep treading water and keep winning and maintaining that record, I mean, they're going to be fine. I mean, the Pirates and the Cubs fans, I mean, yeah, they're getting excited, but they also go, man, we still have six games to clean up. And, you know, they're probably dreading that series as much as Cardinal fans are right now, just because it means a lot. But I would just implore every Cardinal fan I know to just, you know, remember the record. Remember that the Cardinals can fire off five or six games in a row, and what they're even with their very weak offense, this kind of losing streak is just it's remote, it's rare, and all you can hope for is that the Cardinals can just start winning again, like they always have, and when these kind of things do happen, I just gotta remember our record, and you know, and you shouldn't lean on a record, but you know, you also have to remember, as they'll say in sports, I mean, you are what your record is, and the Cardinals are still have a great record.
Yeah, in the second half, if I'm right, the second half schedule is a lesser schedule.
It is.
I think they, you know, playing a lot, averages out under 500. You know, there's still a lot of wins. Like we said many a time, they play 500 ball, they're going to be at 95 wins, which means you've got some play there. We've talked a lot about the offense. We've actually probably put up more hits than the offense has tonight. let's talk about a couple pitchers. We saw Tim Cooney pitch last night. Sorry, it is hard to remember. Cooney pitched much better this time around. But the only reason that Tim Cooney is there is because Jaime Garcia is lingering with that groin injury. Now, as we mentioned earlier, Cooney went down today, which probably means that Garcia is going to be able to make his next start. They must feel fairly optimistic about that.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Cooney first, and then let's talk about Garcia and what that injury means. You know, except for that little, you know, kind of blip there early in the game where he gave up the home run and then a long ball that was basically a double, although Grichik probably should have caught it. He looked significantly better than he did against the Phillies earlier in the year.
He did. He looked like more like a major league pitcher. I remember when he came up and he faced the Phillies, I was worried about him. His tempo was kind of off. He was showing the nerves. I mean, you know, he had his family there, and it was his first start of the year. But this one, you know, he looked like, I mean, I was really impressed by his breaking pitches. I was really impressed by the movement he had on his breaking pitches and the way he was getting these swings from major league hitters. And you're right. In the last two innings, they were his best innings. I mean, he finished up really well. I mean, I think him and Tyler Lyons are both a couple of those guys that could probably have jobs in other rotations. It's just really crowded. Really. You know, I mean, Lyons is going to give up a couple home runs like Cooney. I mean, he's going to be taken deep, but he's also going to have a lot of strikeouts, and he's going to go out there and he's going to give you what you need. I mean, and you can't expect these guys when they get rushed up from Memphis to be great. I mean, it's going to be serviceable, but I mean, and his work yesterday, I mean, I thought Cooney was impressive. I mean, I think, as we saw in Lions' last two starts, I mean, when these guys get comfortable, and, you know, they're both lefties, which, you know, being a southpaw myself, I have to root for them a little bit more just because they're lefties. But, I mean, yeah, Cooney was very impressive, and I think that if he has to come back up, I think Cardinal fans feel a little bit better about it. And I think it just shows you that maybe we don't have a great prospect, a great system as far as the baseball prospectus might have us listed 3 or 4 years ago. We still have guys that can come up here and give you a good start. And Marco Gonzalez is not even part of the equation because he's hurt. So the Cardinals have, I mean, they still have about 8 guys. And we're not even talking about our big guy, you know, Adam Wainwright. It just tells you the depth we have in this system and the depth that can come up here and give us a good quality start in a very important game. And I think Cooney really took a big step last night, not just in the way that his whole start, but in the way he finished. He finished very well.
Yeah, we're kind of a little spoiled in St. Louis. We forget that fourth and fifth starters are not supposed to be, you know, 10-3 with an ERA of around 2. You know, I think both Cooney and Lyons could easily be back-end starters for a number of teams in the division. Now, are they going to be back-end starters for teams that are contending? Maybe there's a debate there, but they easily could be pitching on a team, you know, second division team or something of that nature. There's just not room for them in St. Louis right now, at least not significantly. Cooney, who does go down, it was interesting. It's one of those things I didn't know. You know, when anybody gets sent down, they have to be in the minors 10 days before they can be called up. However, with that new rule of being able to expand your roster to 26 for a doubleheader that's scheduled, that 10-day rule doesn't apply. So Cooney could come back up and pitch in that doubleheader against the Cubs next week. You know, it could be Tyler Lyons. One of those guys is probably going to make that start just because of the way things fall. I don't think there's any way, unless they use Jaime Garcia in that spot, that somebody's not going to come up for that one of those. But we'll talk about Garcia now. Well, Garcia, we thought he would pitch Tuesday and he didn't. Thought he would pitch Wednesday and he didn't. He, at last I knew, had not gotten on the mound to show that he was healthy. That groin injury is not significantly severe, but it is something that is bothering him still. And obviously with Jaime Garcia, you don't risk something else happening. If you know there's an injury, you don't ask for another one. It's frustrating because Garcia's pitched so well, but at least it looks like he'll be back and it won't be one of these DL spins like we're used to with him.
Yeah, I mean, it just tells you how unfortunate the career of Jaime Garcia has been. I mean, the guy is, his career numbers are great, and it just shows you when he's healthy, he's a top of the rotation starter. He's a guy that on this season, he's pitched, I mean, as I've said frequently, the best that I've seen him pitch in his whole career, as far as being efficient, as far as not throwing a lot of pitches and making hitters look foolish at the plate. And when he went down, everybody collectively just kind of, you know, like skipped a beat in their chest, and then they go, here we go again. And it hurts because the Cardinals, as we know, they need all the pitching they can get. So the pitching staff can't take any more lumps outside of a bullpen arm like maybe Matt Belisle, who went down a couple of days ago. I mean, Garcia needs to come back, and I mean, if he misses another start, then we're talking about the DL, and then we're talking about bringing up a guy from, I mean, as we just discussed last night, if you have Tyler Lyons and Cooney, both those guys in rotation, it's probably not the greatest strength right now for a team that's struggling to score runs. So you really need Garcia to be back, and you need him to be as good as he once was. I mean, you know, a week and a half ago, or, you know, last week in Miami, when he really probably had one of his better starts, just, I mean, 7 innings, not a lot of hits, striking out a lot of guys, no walks. The guy, ever since he came back from his first start in New York against the Mets on May 21st, he just doesn't like to walk people. And for the Cardinals pitching staff, I mean, that's just the way they work. They work fast, they get outs, and they're very efficient. Something we've seen with Waka and Martinez this year in wake of Van Wainwright's injury. So, I mean, Garcia has a big chip because, as we know, the pitching's a strength, and if he misses another start, it just makes things seem a little bit more gloomy around St. Louis. So you want him to come back against the Cubs at Wrigley and be the Jaime that we've seen all year. because, you know, at the end of the year, you know, this guy's got an option year coming up. And if I'm the Mozeliak, I'm not really stamping it down as a yes or a no at this point, just because of his injury history, even though how good he's been. I mean, you need him to kind of give you as much as you can see in order to make that decision. Because not only do you have the Hayward contract, you better be able, you have options on guys like Garcia and where your rotation goes, and you want to bring back John Lackey. So you need Garcia to be out there, not only just to help this team win games, but also to give the general manager as much of a look as he can to see what does this guy give you going forward. Is this a new Jaime Garcia? Is his upper body in great condition now? Do we have to worry about more injuries? So anytime, as I said on when he went down or when he missed his start the other day, I said maybe the baseball gods don't want Jaime Garcia to make 32 starts in a season. I don't know. I feel bad for the kid. I just really hope that he bounces back and gets back out there as soon as he can.
Yeah, hopefully it is just a one missed start, and that extra can help out. Maybe that'll keep his arm healthy as well. You know, like I say, he's gone from this going into the season. It was like, this is Jaime Garcia's last year as a Cardinal. There's no way they pick up that $11.5 million or $13 million option. To now we're kind of, hey, well, you could see that happening. You could debate that. You could wonder about that. You know, Lackey's not going to be here. You know, are you ready for Marco Gonzalez? You know, if Garcia continues to pitch like this, even with his injury history, maybe you think about it. You know, at the end of the year, if this keeps up, it may be a completely different conversation than we expected to have. It still seems it's going to be difficult to fit him in structurally, especially with a Hayward contract and with the other arms that are in that system. But I don't think you can rule it out like you could at the beginning of the year. Now, talking about pitchers that you want to see next year, Adam Wainwright says, hey, you know, I just might be able to pitch in October. You know, given the fact that we have seen pretty remarkable recoveries from different things before, are you ruling out an Adam Wainwright in October appearance?
I don't think we can ever not take Adam Wainwright seriously. I mean, he's the one guy in the Cardinals who doesn't produce fluff out of his mouth, or really any athlete in the major leagues, maybe in sports. A guy that doesn't waste words. He doesn't create, you know, fodder or false optimism. I mean, I believe the guy. I mean, he's supposed to be. I mean, I think he's close to getting that boot off, and he's just close to be, you know, getting some range of motion back in that foot. And it's just such a tender and unusual injury, the Achilles. And it's one thing you don't want to rush back, as you saw with as we experienced with Ryan Howard, how he had to have a second surgery when he rushed back, maybe. And you don't want to see it happen with Adam Wainwright. So part of me wants to go, no, just sit down, we'll see you next year. But part of me goes, if you get Adam Wainwright back in any kind of capacity, if you get 80% of Wainwright in the postseason in any kind of role, it could be good. And it can give a shot in the arm to this team, because they all – I mean, Adam Wainwright is really essentially, you know, Lee Marvin and Dirty Dozen to this team. I mean, they all look up to him like he's just a general. He's the veteran. He's the leader, him and Holiday and Molina. So seeing him climb up on that mound again could give a shot in the arm to this team, maybe when they most need it in September. So I don't really want to believe in it, but when, you know, like I said, when Waino says those kind of things, you can't dismiss it.
In 2011, Wainwright obviously had Tommy John surgery. And close to the end of the season, he said he wanted to come back and pitch in October. And even then, he kind of acknowledged that's more of a carrot for him. And I think that's what's going to go on here, too. This is his way of focusing his rehab, of really making himself work at it, and seeing. You know, I mean, longest of long shots, really. It would be difficult to think that you could see him. I mean, obviously he's not going to come back until after the minor leagues are shut down for the end of August. So if he comes back, there's no rehab starts. It seems like he's probably a guy that only can go an inning, maybe two out of the bullpen, if he's healthy. And I think that's a lot of ifs, and I think that's a lot of you know, if you can't have Chris Carpenter, if you can't have Adam Wainwright starting, I don't know that he helps this team as much as he might be able to help that, you know, as you would think that he would be helping it as Adam Wainwright. This is a bullpen that doesn't necessarily need that extra arm. Now, obviously, come postseason, all bets are off, and having an experienced arm is not a bad thing. But he would be in a situation that he hasn't been in since 2006, where he would be coming into games that he's not starting. Obviously, it worked well in 2006, but I don't know that that's the role I would go. So I don't think we're going to see Adam Wainwright. I don't think that it's really a very significant possibility. I do think that that's more of him, you know, giving himself a goal and trying to work toward it. But, you know, who knows? I mean, stranger things could happen. You know, heck, they were talking, Matt Adams said he's working hard trying to get back by October. You know, maybe everybody will just come back by October and we'll have this super strong team, for the postseason, and people will wonder what, you know, wow, imagine what this team could have done if they'd been healthy all year long.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, it's kind of seems like a dream. You know, you get back Adams, and if I mean, if Matt Adams can actually hit, the guy wouldn't have taken a swing since May. So it's just tough to see that. But, you know, when a team like this, this is what fans think about when they lose four straight. You think about Tulowitzki. You think about buying into Wainwright's idea that he can come back. You think about, you know, buying into Adams' idea that he can come back. You think about these things, but you're trying to reach for some kind of resemblance of hope. For an offense, for a team, it just kind of seems to go into these dead zones. And once again, you remember, okay, we have 51 wins, we're okay. But then there's the half party that just goes, I mean, is this going to continue, or is our offense not going to improve? So you kind of have to sit here and think, oh, man, well, what if we had Tulowitzki and our offense wasn't a problem at all? This is what you do in order to recover with a loss. Unless you're like me and you're sipping a nice glass of whiskey right now, that's how I'm handling this loss. And I mean, it really does help. It makes tomorrow seem okay. But, you know, this is what you do when you're dealing with a losing streak. You think about, you know, good things like, oh, Wainwright coming back, Matt Adams coming back, you know, the offense finding some kind of pulse. Maybe, you know, Scruggs and Pham and Garcia get a chance to contribute. But, or maybe Matt Holiday comes back and doesn't miss a beat. We get to Matt Holiday from June 7th. But it's just one of those things where all roads lead to a trade happening. And right now, all fans are going to do is just go wonder is who's going to leave and what the deal is going to, like who's going to come on? Is it going to be a low level move, or it's going to be a very big unexpected move by Mo? Because he knows how this offense has been hitting for the last two seasons, and he knows that we can't expect that to improve. You don't have any big boppers down in Memphis coming up. You know, you have perennial 20 home run guys in the minors like Xavier Scruggs. That's about all the power you have. So I think no matter how the team plays, I think Mozeliak, I think we're going to see a move, and I think it could be for an Adam Lind, or it could be, I think, a name like Adrian Beltre has been thrown around because Texas needs pitching. Maybe the Cardinals do get a third baseman and move Carpenter back to first. It could be something like that. I think anything is going to be possible unless this offense just all of a sudden flips the switch and it goes on a week-long tear.
Well, I would be a little stunned if Adrian Beltre was available, not only because he's kind of almost a legend down in Texas, but they're only 6.5 games behind Houston and only game and a half out of the wild card. They're not, you know, they're not packing it in for the year right now.
That darn wild card. I'm telling you, it's going to hurt trades for us so much because that second wild card makes everything seem possible.
Well, yeah. I mean, the first wild card did. I think there's been a noticeable reduction in trades after the first wild card was announced. But the second wild card, again, it is very difficult to say, hey, we're out of it. Well, one, the Cardinals have their own selves to blame because we saw what happened in 2011. But you look at the American League. The worst teams in the American League are Boston and Oakland. Both of them with 37 wins. Boston has one less loss. They're 6 and 6.5 games out of that last wild card spot. Now, obviously, they have all these teams to cross over. But, you know, you can't just say, well, you know, hey, a strong, you know, good winning streak, and you're right in the mix of that stuff. You look at the National League. You know, Milwaukee's 10 games out. Philadelphia's 17 games out. Yeah, those guys are probably done. Miami and Colorado, 8.5 games out. That's kind of pushing it as well. But Cincinnati, a team 6 games under, is only 6 games out. You know, that's, I think Cincinnati's still going to be a seller, but it is difficult to say, hey, we have no chance this year when, you know, just catching fire, if you think you can do it, you can easily talk yourself into, hey, we can sneak into that that game and win it, and who knows?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, it's just, it's so hard because, you want to think about trades, but they're just not, it's not an easy thing to think. I mean, you can't just think, okay, Lowe's going to make a deal, it's going to be okay. Even when you do that, you go, I mean, that's not possible. So then you start circling around going, okay, this lineup needs to hit. I mean, and this is what people should be thinking about. We need to, I mean, these professional hitters have to come out of this funk. You have to expect more. You have to expect Matt Carpenter to completely bounce back. You got to expect Colt Wong's bat to get hot again. Johnny Peralta, I mean, I think we're getting the best Johnny Peralta we could possibly get. He's the one guy I can't really go. I know there was an article on my website, STL Sportsman, that talked about him bunting last night. But that's just how bad the offense is getting, that we're wanting big league sluggers to bunt just to get a runner over so the Cardinals can scratch out a 2-1 win. I mean, that's how bad it's getting. I mean, you just hope some of these guys take off. I mean, Jason Hayward has had a great, you know, month and a half here, and it's just not enough. I mean, you're switching out first baseman. You're giving Randall Grichuk, I mean, he started the majority of the last 30 games. And, you know, you have Matt Holliday coming back, but when people want people like us to kind of give them a solution, well, I mean, we're trying. But it's just not there. I mean, all we can do is see if Mo can work some kind of magic on the trade deadline, or you can turn around and ask this team to, hey, you guys are highly paid professionals. You guys need to hit better. I mean, you know, we're not asking for a bunch of home runs. We're just asking for, you know, when you have the bases loaded and nobody out, you know, why don't you get a base hit, score two runs? Or why don't you, you know, draw a walk? Or, you know, how about right there if you have a guy who's not really known for his power? Why don't you lay a bunt down to throw the whole defense off? You're almost looking for something magical.
When you first come here, there's been
so many times where the Cardinals put runners on base, but they just don't put more than one run home. That's been the key thing in this four-game losing streak, is just not having that big burst. Like when they scored the three runs against the Padres in the first game of this series, you thought, oh, okay, great, you know, we're coming out of it. No, we're not. We scored one run again tonight, and the whole thing you look at is when we had that bases loaded, nobody out, you're thinking, okay, you got to at least get one, but how about two? Is two runs too much to ask in an inning from this Cardinal offense, this almighty 51-win team? I mean, when you start begging for two runs, man, it's getting pretty dire, and you're asking for a lot from your pitching. So the biggest thing that I can hope for is that the Cardinal hitters is the one that are currently on the roster, because as we mentioned before, Memphis has been stripped bare. I mean, you can't look to Memphis for any more remedies because everybody's on your bench. So when it comes to this team, you either got to lean on the fact that Matt Holliday can give him a jolt, or you got to hope that somebody can just turn it around. Somebody can catch fire.
Yeah, and that's, we'll just have to wait and see if they can do that. It does seem like it's going to be an issue, and I don't know. We'll see. I think I had a thought somewhere along the way, but I lost it, so it's gone. Which means that it's time to wrap this up, because we've gone longer than probably most people. Most people are now saying, "Man, I wish they'd just put that other one up."
Well, we're riding right up. Last night was an hour and 11 minutes. We're right at about an hour and 10, so we're actually pretty good for mimicking last night's show, with just a little bit more dread and gloom and doom mixed in.
Well, and last night we ended with you talking about movies, which we can do again today.
You talked about
let's see, which one was? Oh, it was Terminator that you were talking about last night.
Yeah, so folks, if you want to put the Cardinals out of your mind and you don't mind a useless sequel, you know, go watch Terminator Genisys. It's got Arnold. He's 66 years old, but he still wants to shoot people. He still wants to fire off great one-liners. I wasn't too impressed by the movie, but there's been friends of mine that have said it's pretty good. And friends like a St. Louis radio voice, Max Fosey, he's got a show, 97.1 FM in St. Louis. He liked it, and Max doesn't usually like a lot of these sequels. So if you want to go see a movie that's got action and it's got Arnold doing his thing, because that's all Arnold knows how to do, go watch Terminator Genisys. Terminator 5, it's got, you know, Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones. It's got Jay Courtney, who I don't know how is still getting work in Hollywood. It's got a great cast. It's got a good – I can't say it has a good premise. I think the plot wore me out by the hour mark. But if you want to laugh, you can go watch Seth MacFarlane's Ted, because it's crazy, stupid humor, but it's very funny. and he's very good at what he does. So if you want to laugh, go watch Ted 2. If you want to watch okay action, watch Terminator 5. Or you could stay home and watch a good movie called Chef, which I'll leave for you to go find out what that is.
All right. There you have it, folks. I mean, Dan knows how to switch genres without hesitation. He can go from sports to movies.
Movies are a good escape for me. So when the Cardinals lose, I usually just go watch John Wick again on HBO. Because it just, you know, you can lose yourself in movies, and you come back to real life, and that's when things get sad.
This is true. It's always a problem. So, and again, that's not my forte. So there's very limited times that I get out to the theater. So
now, Shopto, you should mention, as it is a Cardinal thing this year, you should mention about a certain Star Wars night at Busch Stadium this year, and who's going to be there.
That's true. I will get a chance to go to be at Star Wars night. In fact, that week we may have to hesitate on a recording of a show because I won't be back until late on Thursday. But but yes, I will be there for. I actually will be there for the game before and that game, the 28th and 29th. I will be in Busch Stadium. And look forward to being at Star Wars Night for the first time
hopefully,
in 3 years. So.
Hopefully the Cardinals are hitting, or else not. I'm going to send James Earl Jones so he can just go over the loudspeaker system and just do his Darth Vader voice.
That'd be nice. that's going to be an interesting series because they're playing the Reds, which I will say has some significance to us as a family. The last time they played the Reds, my father-in-law passed away, and he was a big Reds fan. He passed away right at the end of that series. This is the first time the Cardinals have played the Reds since then, so it's kind of nice to be there for that. But, you know, by that time, the Reds are going to be a lot different team. They're not going to have Johnny Cueto, most likely. They may not have
Chapman.
Joe Cruz. They may not have Aroldis Chapman. There's a number of people that may not be on that team. When it comes around to it, which is only going to be good for the Cardinals. I mean, golly, if you can go and not have to worry about Chapman at the end of a line, at the end of a game, when you don't have to worry about facing Johnny Cueto, you know, those are good things for the Cardinals. So, yeah, I'm perfectly willing for them to start stripping that team whenever they want to.
I'll tell you what I have to mention is how about the season that Todd Frazier's doing out there in Cincinnati? I mean, he's having an unreal season. I know he's been a guy that can hit some home runs, but even for a team that's down in the dumps, he's having a really good season.
Absolutely. And I hate to say it because it sounds almost like a traitor type thing to say, but if he passes Matt Carpenter in the All-Star voting, it's not an injustice.
It's not at all. Not at all. Especially with, I mean, he's out there just doing everything he possibly can. And, you know, I mean, as much as you don't want to talk good about a Reds player, I mean, Todd Frazier, in a season of doom and gloom, he has 25 home runs and 54 RBIs, and he's got, you know, a 941 OPS on July 3rd. So, I mean, even a guy that plays on a rival team, I have to tip my cap to the guy.
No doubt. And the Reds have said they're not going to trade him, which is reasonable, I think. Yes, his value may never be higher, but also he's probably young enough that if the Reds – can probably contend in the next couple of years, maybe not next year, but in the next couple of years, there's no reason to sell off a guy like that that's still under contract for a number of years. But yeah, well, people like Cueto and Chapman, they should go. We'll see what Uncle Walt does with that.
Well, folks, I can put you at ease that the Indians have finished off the Pirates 5-2, so they are still six games out. I thought I put that in there at the end. I think Pedro Alvarez has made the last out, so that's like a little icing on the cake. Pedro Alvarez made the last out. The Indians have done the Cardinals a favor. The Indians, who have a similar record to the San Diego Padres, have done the Cardinals a favor and beaten the Pirates. They have stopped the Pirates' streak, and the Cardinals still have a six-game lead. So that's a little bit of optimism to build on for tomorrow's game.
That's right. We'll take that as our closing notes to make that a good way to wrap it up. So, assuming that this all recorded, and I have no reason to think that it wouldn't, except for the fact that I didn't do it last night, we will be wrapping this one. Dan and I will. You can still find Dan at StLouisSportsMinute.com as well as various other sites around on the internet. You'll find me at C70. You hear all that at the beginning of the show. You'll hear it later on. That's fine. You know where to find us. Tweet at us, you know, at either the Best Dan's Twitter or our personal ones. We're perfectly willing to talk about baseball and, you know.
Yes, we are.
We might even put it on the show depending on what kind of discussions we have. So until next week, for Dan, I'm Daniel. We'll see ya. Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdanceinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.